Hello and welcome to another episode of VG Club. My name is Paul slash Viv, aka Daxter23Jack, and today I am joined by Ben, aka BJK394,
Hey.
Marcus, aka Cool Luck,
Hello, hello.
Javi, aka Javiously.
The juice is loose.
Oh
That doesn't sound good.
no.
We're talking orange juice, right?
Yeah, yeah. The juice just got out.
Finally, we have Chris, aka Korea9.
Hey, y'all.
And today we are going to be discussing the, what is it, 1999 or 2000 PS1 title. Sorry, I was reading the update from Jushin, just being like, "What's going on in here?" No. But no, Kudulka, or how do you pronounce it? Kudelka?
I've always pronounced it Kudelka.
Okay.
I don't know if
She says
that's
her
correct.
name, right?
Yeah, I think she does, and I think that's what she refers to it as, but
That seems right.
okay,
It's
I
also
thought I
mispronounced multiple times, so.
Were you sub
So,
only, Dex?
am I what? Only?
Were you sub only? Real Pierce with this one?
Oh yeah, total. No. The English vo voice acting was good enough for me. But yeah, I guess just up top. I believe Chris, you said you've played it before, but I think for everybody else, it's our f first time with this game, correct?
Yeah, and last time.
Okay, good to know. That's forewarning of how Marcus f feels about the game. But yeah, I mean, overall, what were you guys' thoughts up top on the game?
My first impressions were like it's exactly it's this feels like one of those movies you had no idea existed, and then you watch it and you're like, oh my gosh, what, how did this fly under my radar? Especially because it's so in the wheelhouse of the kind of games that I'm into, like a PS1 survival horror, kind of clunky tank control pre-rendered background kind of thing, like so playing this, I was just like really excited about it. And I played it really hard for like 3 or 4 days, and then I don't know what happened. Was it Marvel Rivals or something happened, and I just never touched it again.
Sounds about right.
So like I'm like sad to share that like I definitely didn't finish it, but I put a good dent into it, and I thought it was delightful. And it had the terrible voice acting and just goofiness to it that I appreciate. But yeah, I thought it was really cool. I'm glad it exists, and I'm glad that I have it now. But yeah, it was kind of fun to discover.
Good to hear.
Yeah, for me,
Ben.
similar to Avi, of just like this is like some weird combination of like a survival horror PS1 game, but also a JRPG. So I gravitated more to like the JRPG side of things because it, but ultimately I think it's not a very interesting or robust JRPG. It's definitely maybe more of a survival horror game. But like ultimately I think it's an interesting like experiment. Like it was something different. And certainly different from like all the other stuff going on like the PS1 at the same time. So yeah, I'm ultimately also glad I played it, but I also didn't finish it.
Nice.
A game that was plucked out of my nightmares. It's taking the survival horror genre, which is one that horror is already a tough thing for me, but with survival horror it's like okay, all right, it's real tense, there's a lot of like resource management, and so I approach those as let me engage with combat or resource draining activities when I want to, And then on the other side of the coin with JRPGs, I just I don't really like that turn-based combat stuff, so I tend to just say, okay, well, let me grind this out and just make my guy super strong so I don't really have to deal with the systems that I'm not a huge fan of. Well, this game said, okay, yeah, if you do that, you're not going to have resources anymore. And then on the Survival Horror side, it was like, yeah, you don't get to choose when you engage in combat. We're just going to force you into it. So it was just this combination that instantly, it was like a roguelike card builder or deck builder to me, where it's just like, nope, this is not my jam at all. The story bits was one of those like, hey, I could have seen this being a like a Resident Evil sort of thing, like had the cards gone a different direction here. But outside of that, just, yeah, not a fan.
So how many hours did he end up putting into it, Marcus?
Oh, me? Oh, like 30 minutes, but I was out of that, and then I just watched the game online. I was like, can't deal.
Okay, fair enough. And then, Chris, how was it revisiting the game?
I mean, I burned through it real quick. Like, we picked it, before Thanksgiving, I think?
Yeah.
And I think I was done before Thanksgiving. Like, I just burned through it. Like, I enjoy this, like, kind of goofy nonsense, though. And I liked it previously. Like, I you know, had fond memories of it from when I had originally played it back when it originally came out. I'm not sure how I knew about it then, because it doesn't seem like lots of people have any idea about it. They're more familiar with the sequels to it, I guess, kind of sequels, the Shadow Hearts franchise. Which is where this kind of picks up on the PS2. But yeah, I enjoy the clunky kind of original Resident Evil type setup and the weird tactical grid-based RPG combat that it presents you. There are things that I didn't remember about it that we can get into with combat and enemy types and stuff. But yeah, overall, I enjoyed going back to it.
Cool. And yeah, now I think I'm somewhere in between Marcus and Chris. I enjoyed aspects of the game, but I feel like, and it was I'm glad, you know, some game experimented with this formula, but I think in particular the kind of oh God, why am I having a brain fart right now? What's it called when you're random encounters on the map? I did not think that worked for this game.
Yeah,
it's one of those things where, like, I think it might have been like a tech issue, not a tech issue, but like this game goes really hard on the FMV, and especially for the year 2000. They look really lovely. The voice acting is really great for this game, but the voice acting and the FMV might have made it so that, like, oh yeah, we have to go with random-based encounters, and I feel like that worked counterintuitively to the horror aspects of the game.
I'm not sure, because, like, you know, there's FMV in, like, Resident Evil 1, 2, and 3 as well. And once you get into 2 and 3, like, kind of like what's going on here, this game was also 4 discs. So yeah. like they fit that shit on there. This was a weird direct choice, I think.
Yeah. I think randomized encounters was just a fact of RPGs at the time. Like, even Final Fantasy 7, 8, and 9 have that. Like, it's, it's just how those kinds of games functioned, and it took a long time for RPGs to, like, get out of that. I think that it's made even worse, though, by the fact that the pre-rendered backgrounds are, like, almost indecipherable. It's like, what am I even looking at here? And so you're just bumping against everything, you know, pressing the action button to see.
Sometimes it's really dark, yeah.
Sometimes the door is the camera, right? Like, you have to, like, push against an invisible wall and, like, oh, there's an exit there, you know. So,
yeah, this was definitely a game I needed to use a walkthrough for. And even sometimes with the walkthrough, like, I would be like, okay, I don't get what the walkthrough is trying to tell me and have to look up like a video walkthrough, like no commentary, to be like, oh, that's what they meant. That was only a couple of instances, but I definitely had to do that once or twice.
Oh, yeah. Like, I definitely had an instance or two where I like beat a boss or something and I'm like, well, now what? Right. And you look at the map and the map's kind of useless. It's like, what? And so you kind of backtrack, hoping that you stumble across what you're supposed to do now.
Or that you picked up the item you need to put in a door or something.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, I'm curious. When you originally played this game, Chris, did you beat it?
Yeah.
Okay, so did you beat it without like a guide or a walkthrough of any sort?
I don't think they had. Like, I mean, maybe on like GameFAQs or something, I might have looked something up. I definitely looked at a guide this time around because I didn't remember anything past like the first disc.
It's been 25 years. I think you can give yourself a break.
It's been a little bit.
But, go ahead.
No, I don't remember. Like, I definitely know there likely was not like a Brady Games guide for this. Like, if there was anything, maybe on like GameFAQs or something like that, where like there was a text document somebody put up, but I can't really remember.
You went to GameFAQs.
Yeah.
.com.
I mean, that's where I went for my walkthrough. Nice. 25 years later, it works.
It's wild now because like you can just kind of type it in and like there are full on walkthroughs. Like Marcus did it, right? Like you kind of just watch the cutscenes and stuff. Like people, like it's all out there.
There's just straight up like it wasn't even just the cuts. Because I watched like the movie cut version too, just to be like I try to piece it all together again, but. Mm-hmm. I was watching like a straight walkthrough, and yeah, it's just like someone, no commentary, just playing the game for like 8 hours, however long the video was.
Yeah, we've come a long way from an ASCII document.
Yeah, I was going to ask y'all, because I know we all played this in different ways. How were you guys able to see like everything on screen when you were playing?
I think so.
I had to turn the brightness way up on my laptop.
Because like when I would watch some of those videos, I was like, "Well, this is like I'm seeing detail here I never saw before." So like it was very strange. And there were other videos I watched where like, nope. Again, it was like the version I played where it's like you can't see anything. Like all the detail gets lost in the darkness.
Mm.
I wonder if there's like an emulator out there that's kind of like what is it, Dolphin for like the Wii, which the Dolphin kind of like upscaled stuff. So maybe there's a PS1 Dolphin that upscales those games.
I mean, but that would only really work on the battle sequences that are actually rendered in 3D, because like the pre-rendered backgrounds are just like super super low resolution images. And I don't know. It was. Like I said, indecipherable at times. Like it just looks like black texture. But I don't know. Maybe because with Final Fantasy IX, I know fans have like put all of the pre-rendered backgrounds through like AI upscalers, and they were able to like double or triple the resolution. I don't know if the video you were watching had a mod that did something like that. Or maybe the brightness on what you were playing was like so low that you actually couldn't see anything. Not sure.
It was definitely dark. I played it on an emulator on my Steam Deck. And it seemed fine. Like there were definitely parts where it was like super dark, but I could see everything for the most part. It wasn't just complete blackness. There was a couple spots where, especially when you're in the dungeon area where the light is very low, that like you're kind of stumbling around, but I mean, I was able to kind of make my way through it, so.
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess before we talk about the story, did you guys know who Edward Plunkett was before you played this game?
Nope.
No. Is he a real person?
He's a real person. He's an author who inspired Lovecraft, and the entire company that made this game, what is their name? It's Sacknoth. Is taken from one of his works of literature. And it was really random that this guy was like a real life person. So they kind of just like inserted him into the game, and it seems like he doesn't show up in the Shadow Hearts games either. But yeah, I thought that was an interesting fact. I was looking it up afterwards, and I was like, huh, okay.
Same person, like the timing lines up?
Yeah, the timing lines up.
Yeah, well, was this like late 1800s, something like that?
Yeah, the game takes place in 1898.
Yeah, and... Yeah, so he died. He born in 78 and died in 1957. So, matches. He would have been 20 years old at the timing of whatever this game was.
Yeah, no, and that's, I mean, like, neat. If you're timing wise, that it's neat, and then you go with Lovecraft's predecessor, so you don't have to deal with the more problematic aspects of Lovecraft himself.
What do we know about the predecessor, though? Like, come on.
I'm just saying we don't know as much about the predecessor. I mean, I'm sure the predecessor was sexist, racist, all of that, all those lovely.
Everybody saw
xenophobia.
Yeah, I've read some of Lovecraft's work, a lot of it, in fact, but I don't think I've ever read Plunkett's work, so not sure how problematic he is.
I'm just saying, like, given the time, I'm making a broad generalization, but yeah, just, you know, a wealthy kind of upper crust member of kind of the English echelon, I would assume, doesn't have the most progressive views. But again, that's a broad generalization. So,
and I mean, when they were making the game back in 2000, that's not really a thing. They were like saying, "Oh no, we can't use Lovecraft because, man, have you seen his shit?" But like, I think
this game has to be
a nice
PC,
little Easter egg thing.
This game has to be PC. I mean, our main character is, you know, a witch with a mini skirt.
What are we playing? Woke Delka?
Wow. That's horrible. But, yeah, I mean, does anybody want to kind of just broadly describe the plot for the game?
Perfect. You could tell us.
Okay. Thank you, Marcus, for giving me permission to talk. So yeah, Kodoka, like we said, it takes place in 1898. The game opens with our main character, Kodelka, a pagan woman who goes to this old monastery that was built hundreds and hundreds of years ago by... It sounds like a monster, a worshipping a member of the clergy or something. The exact backstory, I don't know. But regardless, she gets there, uses a grapple hook to scale the castle, breaks in through a window, and discovers one of our other main characters, Edward Plunkett, on the verge of death, and. And then Edward kind of saves her from a monster that's sneaking up behind her, and then the two kind of have each other's backs. They encounter an old couple that tries to poison Edward in turn, And then later in the story, they discover another character who is a, oh God, is he a duke? What's his name? The dick.
The bishop?
The bishop, there we go. What's his name?
James.
Yeah, James. Thank you.
He's a dick.
But yeah, and then basically the kind of explore kind of the resident trying to figure out what exactly is happening and why this. Yeah, there's so many like people who have been killed over the centuries, and yeah, along the way they encounter, you know, like colorful cast of characters, including a young ghost girl, a immortal alchemist who has found the secret to eternal life, but you know, he looks pretty crusty for being like over 700 years old.
Like Yoda.
Yeah. No, I think you're right on that front. And then they eventually discover that the owner of the monastery lost his wife in a home invasion. Some robbers ended up killing her, and he was so sacked with grief that him and the groundskeeper, the sailor, have been trying to perform druid magic and they eventually had to use human sacrifices and killed over 200 people that they picked up on the streets of London to bring the wife back to life. But when they brought the wife back to life, the wife it was the soulless plant monster. Basically, a very Resident Evil, parasite Eve of vibes from it, and yeah, our trio has to face off against our killer, which is painful for James because the wife was an ex flame of his, and then yeah, the game ends depending on whether you picked up a pendant that Kuduk dropped during the first like minute or two of the game, and whether you win or lose the boss fight against the monster wife.
Yep, and if you don't pick up that pendant, you just insta die.
Yeah, the skull melts like Indiana Jones style.
Like you can still kind of lose that fight if you have the pendant, and that. You know, will determine whether somebody lives or dies, I guess, in it. But yeah, if you don't have it, it's just like, here's your ending, you're dead.
Yeah, and actually the canon ending for this game is you losing that boss fight.
Yes.
Which I was like, huh, why is this the canon ending? Because like the other ending, like where you win, it feels almost like unsatisfying, like the ex-wife, the monster, it looks like she's about to say something and then she just explodes. And then James is there afterwards like, I don't know anymore. And everybody picks themselves off the ground.
It doesn't really tie into Shadow Hearts going forward. Like, it's very, very limited in what carries on from here, so.
Yeah, but I think for the canon ending, James has to die, or rather self-sacrifice himself, yes. Reunite with the wife up in heaven, because, you know, he's the love interest who didn't murder over 200 people, even though he's still a dick. And then with James out of the way, Kudelka and Plunkett can have sex in a tent, which is the catalyst for a character that appears in later Shadow Hearts games.
Yes.
Sorry, I know that's a weird way of putting it, but you know James would not have been on board on that. Oh, with that, just interrupting them, like, no, you're unmarried.
I mean, maybe after such a traumatic experience, he has like a we just face Pennywise type moment, and they all just get together and bang. Except they're not 12.
I did not know that's what happens in it.
Yeah. The middle of in the book. I don't think they have the weird child orgy in the movie. But in the book, there's a weird. It's fucking strange, man. But yes, that's what happens in it.
Okay, so, yeah. Yeah, that has to be one of the books Stephen King wrote when he was on drugs, right?
Maybe.
Sorry, I mean,
it's possible.
But yeah, no, that's the story of Delka, and yeah. I don't know. I mean, it's pretty simple. It doesn't get too complicated. Character like chemistry, like sometimes like you can tell Kodoka and Plunkett just hate James. Like they take every opportunity to kind of like rag on him throughout the story. Like when they confront a kind of this thief that's trying to kill them, they're just like, "Oh yeah, James is a total asshole." Just completely like wail into him. But I don't know, it's kind of nice to have like a JRPG party where, you know, the characters don't aren't, you know, like holding hands. They're together because they're like, oh well, we all have our own separate objectives, and being together is the best way to get through this nightmare hellscape we've found ourselves in.
Yeah, I'm not really sure that they, like, outside of, you know, Edward and Kudelka hooking up at the end, I'm not really sure any of them really like each other. Kudelka's pretty short with Edward a bunch of the times as well.
Yeah, but she has some vulnerable moments with Edward, yes, towards the end, which I guess kind of helped pave the way for that, you know, that ending, but... Yeah.
Bottle of wine will do that.
Well, I think also, like, Kudoka doesn't have, like, ostracized from her village for kind of hearing voices at a young age and kind of lived on her own. So I don't think she has much in the way of kind of, like, hasn't really been social with a lot of people. So her kind of standoffish demeanor might be a result of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
And then Plunkett is just this kind of wealthy royal dude who wants to have an adventure. So not like a ton going for him on the character front either. And then James kind of has this whole revelation, finding out his friend was, you know, the true monster, you know, killing over 200 women, that sort of thing. So he's going through a crisis of faith.
And he's a dick, so.
Yeah. Yeah. That is undeniable.
Just like,
but yeah, I mean, Marcus, I know you were just watching the so did you just watch the FMV cutscenes, or did you watch kind of like the dialogue, like in engine stuff too?
Yeah, so I did both. When I would watch like a full game playthrough, get to the gameplay, like the fights, and I would sort of screw up through that, so we get to the next sort of like wandering around and like picking up stuff and looking at all the sort of notes and things like that, that side of things. So I got as much of an experience of the game as I wanted. I'm not going to speak too much on the gameplay stuff, because it's, you know, you see four frames for a fight. I don't really know how that plays out later on in game, if it gets more complex or what as far as the combat goes. But those characters, man, this game felt strange to me because it felt like some of the voice acting was actually good. Like, I actually liked some of the voice acting. But then, like, maybe it's the direction or something where, like, they just said, oh, we had him in this, you know, the studio for like 3 days and this is the only take we had. So they just used it. So there'd be like a lot of like strange cuts between lines. I'm not sure how to describe it. And then of course there's also the, like, some of the pacing of it would just be real anime dub pacing where it's just like the dialogue's just bad. And it, you know, you can't really blame the actors for doing the best of what they had. So it just felt all over the place on that front.
Yeah. But I mean, like, I think this came out like around the same time as like Sonic Adventure. And I think most of us would argue that the voice acting in this is way better than that game, for example.
That's a really strange comparison point you made there.
Yeah, I mean, the voice acting is better in this game than almost anything else of that era. So that's something it has going for it.
Yeah, you know, the voice acting in this game, better than Luigi's Mansion. Yeah.
No. Show some respect to Metal Gear Solid,
which was you're right, that was but Metal Gear Solid was 98, right?
Yes.
Okay, I was trying to
how to do it.
True. Didn't even have to deal with lip flaps. Kojima was a genius.
True.
But yeah, no, that's the story. I mean, it's simple. I think it works. Honestly, it's more one of those situations where I feel like some gameplay elements kind of undermine some of the kind of creepy atmosphere that the story and narrative was trying to tell. But that might just be me. Like we said earlier, kind of Kodoka is like a kind of, it's a horror themed RPG. It's still an RPG at heart. It just kind of has some like gothic horror elements to it. And yeah, random based encounters. So when you're walking on the map, you'll go into like a grid based layout. Your character can attack the spots right in front of them or diagonal to them, unless they have a weapon like a spear that allows them to attack from farther away, or magic where you can just use that on any point of the map. And honestly, it's also kind of going back to what Marcus said, like you can use magic for the entire game because every time you level up, your MP, your HP kind of gets restored, so there really isn't like a lot of limited resources going on here.
And it's something I didn't know the first time around, like you know, looking up a walkthrough and I'm like, hey, you're gonna want to specialize, like it's like you're gonna want to make Edward into a melee guy, and then Kudelka and James into magic users, and just dump all your points into them, like it, because there's like weird levels of where it just gets harder for no apparent reason. But if you're leveling that way and you're consistently, I guess we didn't touch on the fact that like you level up your weapons and skills by using them as well. So your magic goes up level, like the more you have to use it like a bunch of times, and then it'll go up to level 2 magic and then level 3 magic, and you want to keep utilizing it to do that and having a higher intelligence rating or whatever will make those skills better as well.
Yeah, I know
you want to, like, dump into magic.
Yeah, I know with the magic, the more you used it, the more like more powerful it'd become, but it wasn't that way with the weapons, right?
No, like, the weapons were too, yeah. Like if
it was?
Level up your spears, you like, but it has to be that type of weapon. So You want to, like, and it's like, why do I have 17 spears or swords or shit in my inventory? And it's because of that. They break, like, there's durability to the weapons, which is terrible because you can never really tell when it's going to break. It's just random. But yeah, you upgrade your different weaponry that way as well by utilizing it.
Yeah, and there's no, like, even in, like, Resident Evil 2, at the very least, you know, you had a place where you could store, like, excess items in this game. You don't really have that, so at a certain point, you just have to start dumping a lot of the items you get so you can keep carrying around other stuff.
You do get, like, what, 70 or something. Like, it's a pretty big inventory. It's just, yeah, it's not infinite, so, but in Resident Evil, you definitely want to dump your shit into the storage box.
Yeah, it just felt bad. I'm like, oh, I have to throw all this bread away. Okay. Or, like, throw away, like, I think this weapon wasn't the best. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and toss it. And then you had, to, like, each weapon had, like, an elemental affinity to it. Like, oh, there's light weapons, there's dark weapons, there's water weapons, fire weapons, etc. So that also played a part. But outside of, like, oh, shoot, this type of weapon heals this enemy, I didn't really pay attention to kind of elemental affinity stuff that all that much.
What were you going to say, Ben?
Yeah, the like weapon degradation was definitely one of the worst things in this game. I get that they're trying to make it more survival horror-y of just, like, you know, your weapons break and they break, like, really fast. Same with, like, guns. Like, if you run out of bullets, you're kind of screwed on guns. But eventually, once I figured out that magic trick, I basically gave all the melee weapons to Edward and just made everyone else magic users. And then that sort of kind of solved the problem.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. And then I guess just gameplay wise, you played before Thanksgiving pretty much for like a 3 or 4 day span and haven't played it in the last like 2 months pretty much, right, Javi?
Yeah.
Okay. I was just wondering if you had anything to say on like the gameplay, the mix of kind of horror elements and RPG.
Yeah, I thought it was a novel idea. I don't know if I love how it all came together in the end, though. You know, I'd get into a battle and it was just such a slow wind up, and the like taking two or so turns to like even get to the enemy. And then I'm like, what is this all in service of? Because often enough, or it was like, it never got very tactical. It was never like, okay, I gotta plan it out. Like, if I stand over here, I'll be able to, you know, not take their attack, and then I can step in. I don't know. Maybe I just didn't get far enough, but it just, the grid system didn't seem necessary, in my opinion. So I don't know. It was a cool idea. I don't think I loved it. But the battle music, man, that battle music, if you have a battle that lasts long enough, it like ramps up into some other genre. I can't even remember what it sounded like, but I was like, oh, this is so cool. Like, I really because enjoyed it.
The main battle music is kind of like, I'm not saying it is, but it gave me this like Egyptian, like Egyptian vibe. Like, oh, this is something I could, you know, see like right out of like Eternal Darkness or something.
Sure.
Javi, I don't, it never really gets much more tactical. There's some, and this is where kind of like the weird difficulty spikes come in. You can kind of cakewalk through most of the battles. But there are some bosses that are just kind of annoying. And so like you can use Edward to kind of stave them off from getting at James and Kudelka. because they can't move past him. Like you can't move past whatever's the front line of the enemy either, but they can't move past whatever is your front line either. So you can kind of like keep them at distance by throwing Edward out into the front.
Yeah. He's the tank.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it was this Kodoka was one of the games where I'm like kind of having to accept where the game is rather than what I kind of could foresee it being, if that makes any sense. It's like part of me is just like, oh, I feel like some of these like horror elements would have looked worked a lot more if like, oh, you know, you're trying to avoid like an enemy on the map before you go into like the kind of tile-based, you know, RPG mechanics. I feel like that kind of would have elevated kind of the aura of danger. Yeah. But this game apparently had a lot of because the Sakuroth, that studio, it was made by a lot of ex-Square Soft folks at the time, and there was a lot of creative differences going on in the background during the development of this game, so that probably impacted several factors, but yeah. Overall, I think it's a very good... I enjoyed the game. It's a good experiment, but yeah, it definitely does have its issues.
I have a question about the spiritual sequel, direct sequel, whatever that other series is.
Shadow Hearts.
Is it like this? Like what is it?
Oh no, it's more of a straight like traditional JRPG. Like
does it deal with the same characters?
Yeah, I think what Paul, you said that like one of the characters from like because James and Kudelka hook up, like somebody shows up later in that series, but it's not really focusing on that. It's just kind of in that same world.
Yeah, Kudoka is no longer a main character, I think, in the Shadow Hearts games, and kind of just makes some appearances.
Yeah, the Shadow Hearts games though are, you know, they take place in like the early 1900s, and so like the setting is kind of similar, but it ditches the Resident Evil kind of, you know, traversal mechanic, the pre-rendered backgrounds, all that's gone. It's more a traditional JRPG.
Cool. Well, before we kind of go into everybody's, I guess I already gave my final thoughts on the game, but before we go into everybody else's final thoughts on the game, did anybody else want to say anything about either story, gameplay, the music, voice acting, anything like that?
You mentioned that it was made by like ex-Square people, and I think knowing that now, I don't know if I knew that at the time, because we just didn't really have the information, really. Like, maybe it was in, like, a magazine article or something back in 98, 99, before the game came out. But you see, like, all the cutscenes and stuff, like, they definitely, the pull from that era of Square is definitely, like, seen here with their cutscenes and their storytelling, and it coming from I think the director of this was he was also somebody who worked on like Secret of Mana and those games, which are all like weirdly experimental.
He was the composer for Secret of Mana. Square Enix wouldn't let him go from composer to game director, and so he left.
Yeah, so he worked as a musician on that stuff, like making great music for games that are super weird as well, gameplay wise. And he comes over and he's like, "Hey, what if we blended Resident Evil and RPG combat? Wouldn't that be weird?" Like, it's super interesting to me that's how it all kind of played out.
It's. Yeah, to me, I always think about how how successful must Resident Evil have been? Because you had Konami put out the order that we need one of those, and we got Silent Hill, and you got Square Enix, or Square at the time, say, we need one of those, and you got Parasite Eve, and then now you have Codelka. Like, all these games were, like, trying to, like, capitalize on that success. Really interesting how they all have their own, like, they're all very different, despite aiming for the same target. But they all have that survival horror DNA in there. You can see it.
Yeah, like Fear Effect came out around that same time, which is another like weird taking inspiration from Resident Evil.
Mm-hmm.
It's neat.
I'm curious. So for on the PS1, there was the Parasite Eve games.
Yeah,
I never played those, and I know they were kind of. Maybe it's obviously they had their own thing going, but it was definitely like a, you know, horror themed kind of like RPG mechanics. Mm-hmm. I guess like just comparing the two, like do you feel like there's any similarities or really not at all?
Oh, for sure. Parasite even moves around a little bit more. It's more chapter based. But you get into an environment, the pre-rendered backgrounds, with you know, random encounters. So yeah,
the battles the battles are similar in a way to Codelka, but they throw out the grid system, and instead every like you have like a sphere.
You're in a sphere.
Yeah, there's like a And I think, I don't remember exactly how that functions, if you can like walk around freely or before you attack or not, but yeah, it's not on a grid, that I know.
And Parasite Eve is a better game.
Oh yeah, I figured. I was just kind of like, these came out in the same era, so I was just wondering kind of like how they compared, because I imagine some people might have compared them at the time.
I mean, this strikes me as like the indie, you know, version of those kinds of games. Like Parasite Eve, you can look at it and it's like, oh, they had money. Like this is a Squaresoft production, you know, from the makers of Final Fantasy, you know, like and then Codelka is a little bit more quaint, a little more scaled down. I mean, that opening cutscene in Codelka is pretty nice, though. Like I remember when I booted up the game, I'm like, holy crap, this is cool. But
no, it definitely gave me like Shadow of the Colossus vibes, just kind of like you know, this very like somber atmosphere, this, you know, like hooded figure riding alone on a horse.
The big castle.
Yep. But with that said, Ben, what were your final thoughts on the game?
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, I think it's an interesting game. I think a lot of the blending of you know, JRPG and survival horror, I think ultimately doesn't work as well in this as it would in other games. But I think it's a neat experiment, you know, from like that PS1 era of JRPGs, where like there was just a ton of experimentation with a lot of stuff going on. So yeah, I think ultimately it's a interesting game that I'm more interested in, like the Shadow Hearts franchise now. Like I'd be willing to give one of those a shot because I haven't played those, and I have heard good things about that. But yeah, ultimately I'm glad I played it, but I understand why this is more of a cult hit than not like a big like blockbuster thing like, you know, Final Fantasy or whatever.
Cool. And Marcus, I think I already know your thoughts, but please sum up how you feel about the game.
Did we lose Marcus?
No, I think this is just how he feels about
the game. Oh, that's how he feels about it. No, it's fair.
Yeah, we might have lost Marcus, so we'll go ahead and come back to him at some point. But Javi, how far did you get in the game? Did you get to like disc 3 or did
no,
you
make I was it still past on disc 2? It was definitely
okay.
Yeah, yeah. But I think I beat like 2 or 3 bosses. I don't know. You know, yeah, I don't feel too confident to like have a strong take on the game necessarily. It is very much just like a first brush with the game. I appreciated a lot about it. I mean, I'm kind of just going to echo my opening statements. Just, I love the, you know, that time of games survival horror games. I thought the RPG combat was an interesting idea, but it never really like felt great and it was incredibly slow. I gave the game a fair enough shake. I would say I appreciate it. I really appreciate it from afar. I might, you know, on a rainy day boot it up and maybe I'll like get really into it, but that's a big what if. But I do, I'm happy it exists. I'm happy to know it exists. And it's just another one of those PS1 era horror games that I can point to and appreciate.
Nice. And then, yeah, Chris, I'm curious, compared to your experience with the game 25 years ago, because you sold it after you were done playing it, correct?
Yeah, but I mean, that was kind of standard process. Like, let's see, I was probably like 18, 19 years old when I played it. Like, almost, yeah, I would be roughly about a, probably 21 when the game came out. So yeah, like I'm working jobs.
Yeah, I'm not docking you for selling it. I mean, you couldn't have known that it would be worth $200+.
No, it's like it's fucking frustrating, right? Because it's like you spend $40 and like you go to GameStop or at a local game store and you trade it in and you don't get, if you go to the local game store, maybe half of that. GameStop, you get like $10, and so like you sell off like 4 games so you can play whatever the next new game is. You have no idea that like some of these weird games that you picked up that nobody even knew about would become collector's items.
Yeah, and I guess the reason why I brought that up is it seems like you haven't played it since you sold the game 25 years ago. So.
No.
But yeah, this is your second time through. So how was the replay in comparison to kind of your memories of the game from 25 years ago?
So memory of the game was bad. I still liked it. Like it's still, you know, I burned through it very quickly on this replay. But I think like Ben said, like some of the survival horror mixed with JRPG, you know, stuff doesn't really, it doesn't really work. I think Dax, you might have mentioned it as well, that like, you know, some of that tension is lost, like that you, because it's not real time, right? You're not being chased. You're not having to pull it out. It's like, all right, we're going to go into this you know, turn-based battle. And that just kind of sucks the air out of the room. I found that stuff fun and enjoyable, but it's not, it's more of a cool experiment than it is a really good game. But I still enjoyed it. I had a good time with it. Enjoyed the goofy story. And, you know, much like Javi, I am happy that this game exists. And I'm happy that you guys, like, all played it and were like, you know, Ben came out going, I might check out a Shadow Hearts game now. Like, that's kind of cool. That's, you know, can't ask for more than that, so...
Yeah, I think I'm in the same boat as Ben. Especially probably over the summer, I'll probably be in a position to kind of check out the original Shadow Hearts and see how I like this game compared to Kodolka itself. But No, I'm glad you were able to have a good experience with the game, Chris. But yeah, some of that tension is definitely lost. I mean, like, it's elements like, oh, whenever you walk into a room with the boss, you know, there'll be text at the bottom, be like, something's not right here, or whatever it says. So you're always prepared for whatever kind of difficult boss fight you're going to walk into.
Yep.
But yeah, no, fun experiment, definitely elements of the game that are a bit rough, but yeah, I think overall I'm glad I played the game. I did have some tech issues with the game, and I don't know if that was some of it was definitely like a emulator thing, like I was having trouble like projecting the emulator to my TV, so I had to play the entire game on my laptop. Because every time I projected it to my TV with an HDMI cord, the audio would slow to a crawl, and yeah, voice acting was scary. I was gonna say something else. Oh yeah,
the laptop's the better place to play that.
Maybe, yeah, no, more of a
like don't have it stretched on a TV.
Yeah, no, and just like back then, I feel like. Just TVs were a lot smaller, especially for a lot of us, because you know you're probably playing it on like, if you're lucky, a 20-something inch TV at the time. But I also ran into an issue where I was trying to grind to take down the like gargoyle creature that was in the church, and my game froze up on me, and I ended up losing like 20-30 minutes of grinding. So after that, I kind of just gave up on the gargoyle.
Frustrating.
Yeah, because that's probably the hardest enemy in the game, and you need to defeat that enemy to get the most powerful weapon, which is Sacknoth, or the name of the studio. It's a sword that's in the freaking courtyard. I think it's kind of in the screen right next to where the pendant fell.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, and I think that about does it for Codelca. I think Chris, you said that Grace was supposed to be choosing the game for the next episode, correct?
I think Marcus said that, but yes.
Oh, okay, I thought it was you. My apologies, Marcus. But yeah, so since we don't know what's up with Grace, unlike most episodes, we're not going to end by voting on the game, but we will be back in the next months to record our next episode. And yeah, and until then, thank you so much for listening. Anybody else have anything else that you want to add before we end the podcast?
Yeah, now that y'all can hear me again, I'm not sure what happened there. Hopefully, was my audio like from the webcam the whole time up until now? Was it some real shit?
I mean, we could hear you previously.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Well, I shared in our little chat my feelings on the game. I felt like it was just succinct enough. It's just okay. Just that random stuff. I don't like it.
I don't like it.
Fair enough.
30 minutes, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's crazy.
That and the movie and the gameplay, the gameplay walkthrough, just, not my thing. You know, a lot of y'all said the stuff of, like, it's a cool experiment. Like, that's neat that they tried it. But boy, you know, not all experiments have to come out.
Yeah, that's like when I... my game was Death Stranding. She's like, yeah, I'm not playing that.
I'm just looking at the GIF for this Galarian's game that you posted, and I'm just like, this telekinesis kid just killing a bunch of guys in the hallway?
Yep.
Cool.
Looks cool.
Why didn't we play that?
I think I picked all JRPGs last time.
Oh yeah.
But
I chose the shortest one.
I did think of I thought of this as we were talking about other horror kind of Resident Evil inspired games. So I remember this goofy one.
That looks awesome.
I mean, the main character doesn't look like they're in any danger at all here.
They just have a headache.
Yeah. Everyone else.
Migraine and giving you all migraines.
Did this happen in Stranger Things? Escaping from the facility?
Yeah, that's a pretty standard horror sci-fi trope.
Everyone knows the Stranger Things ripped off Galarians on PS1.
Yep.
All right. So yeah, that is an episode. Again, thank you so much for joining us, folks. And we'll hopefully be back here in the next two or something months. Thank you, Ben. Thank you, Marcus. Thank you, Javi. And thank you, Chris, for joining me today. And yeah, hope everybody who's listening has a wonderful day. Say bye, Javi.
Goodbye.